A roadmap on adaptation. On the Just Transition Work Programme, there's a demand, it's being echoed by civil society and by the developing countries, the G77, saying we need a BLEM action mechanism. This sounds like a technical term, but really what it means is that there will be not just coordination, but actually a concrete plan that allows people to plan about how we manage this change and ensure everybody has a right to live with dignity and harmony with our planet. Now, the third thing is on fossil fuels. Now, fossil fuels themselves aren't in these negotiations as such, but there are countries coming here, like Colombia, that's saying we've got a roadmap. We can ensure that we can move away from fossil fuels, but that, of course, requires us to have finance. It requires us to understand the diversification for lots of countries who are relying on fossil fuels, and of course, recognizing that for many countries, including developing countries, they're trapped in a cycle of debt, which means that they keep having to exploit their fossil fuels. So if we want to end that, we need a plan on that as well.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for today, but we are here all week. We're talking about the climate catastrophe and what people are doing about it. I want to thank Asad Rehman, now chief executive of Friends of the Earth. That does it for our show as we broadcast from the UN COP30 Climate Summit in the Brazilian city of Belém, the gateway to...
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
You are listening to KBOO.
I'm Jude.
And I'm Jude.
We are part of the KBOO Youth Collective.
And on the fourth Wednesday of every month, our show, The Underground, airs.
Tune in on November 26th for our live presidential election,
where we determine which youth deserves to hold the crown of the underground.
Your vote matters.
And when you vote,
vote for Jude!
Wait, what?
Yeah, I mean, I thought...
Yeah, you were voting for me. I'm Jude.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News... The California National Guards members sent to Portland are going home.
Oregon's public defender crisis shows signs of improvement.
And local New Seasons workers authorize a December strike.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, November 17th, 2025. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Josh Salem. The 200 federalized members of the California National Guard stationed in Oregon have been here for over 6 weeks. Now they're headed home after a judge's order. Half of the Oregon National Guard members that were under federal control will also be allowed to return home. These Guard members have not been allowed to deploy to Portland and have had little to do. That's because the Trump administration's case for needing a military support at the Portland ICE facility was rejected by a district court judge. A permanent injunction was handed down by Judge Karen Immergut last week. Now, the Trump administration has filed an emergency request to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to overrule Immergut. The Ninth Circuit is already considering a limited judgment they previously gave, allowing Trump to send in the National Guard. 100 Oregon National Guard members remain under federal control. Elsewhere, 200 Texas National Guard members, who were supposed to be sent to Chicago, are also going home. Reporting from the New York Times indicates that the prospect of being separated from family during the holidays was at least part of the decision-making process.
Oregon's public defender crisis isn't over, but the latest numbers show improvement. The Oregon Public Defense Commission says the U.S. Constitution guarantees anyone accused of a crime the right to legal representation, even if they can't afford it. Usually that's where public defenders come in. But in Oregon, there aren't enough public defenders to represent everyone in need of a lawyer, and it's had disastrous effects. That includes a huge backlog of cases, but also people sitting in jail, unable to move to the next part of their trial and legal case because they don't have anyone to represent them. New numbers show 30% drop in the amount of people still waiting for legal representation. Ken Sanchagrin is the intern executive director at the Oregon Public Defense Commission. He told the Oregon State Senate Judiciary Committee where they found success at a meeting Monday.
I'm very pleased to inform you that as far as Coos County is concerned, we believe that we have effectively eliminated the unrepresented crisis within Coos. As of October 31st, we had 2 out of custody and 0 in custody individuals within Coos County who were unrepresented. As of Friday, we had 1 out of custody individual and 0 in custody who were unrepresented in Coos County. A lot of what was happening in Coos County, you know, thinking back to what drove the crisis and now what is helping to address it is in the middle of 2024, one of our sole provider in the county lost several attorneys that really resulted in that county being down around 50% of its capacity. In part to help make up some of that ground or to hold us steady, the OPDC trial team sent one of its Marion County attorneys down to Coos County, and actually she's been staying in Coos County with a plan to bring her back at the end of the year.
He also reported some decreases in Jackson and Marion counties. For other counties like Multnomah and Douglas counties, it's more of a mixed bag when it comes to their level of success. Advocates say reducing the backlog is only the first step in fixing the problem. Issues do persist because public defenders are not well compensated for a job that is very demanding. The Oregon Public Defense Commission is being sued by the public defenders of Marion County, who say the contract quotas put out by the commission are impossible to meet.
Oregonians may once again be constrained to either using M or F as the gender marker on their passports, as the U.S. Supreme Court has temporarily allowed this limitation on gender identity as demanded by the Trump administration. Advocates for transgender rights say they'll continue their legal battle, calling the ruling unconstitutional. Isabel Charlet has the details.
The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled to, at least temporarily, allow an order by the Trump administration limiting passport gender markers to only male or female based on a person's original birth certificate. The order had been blocked by a federal judge after a lawsuit brought by the American Civil Liberties Union and transgender plaintiffs. The ACLU argues the rule is unconstitutional because it discriminates based on sex and transgender status. Blair Stenvik with Basic Rights Oregon says while this is a setback, it isn't the end of the legal battle.
Trans people have existed for a long time, and we have had to deal with having incorrect markers on our identifying documents before, and so we will still go on. We can keep existing even if the government doesn't want to recognize us and wants to make our lives harder.
Stenvik explains that existing passports, including those with the letter X as a gender marker, will remain valid until they expire. However, anyone applying for a new passport, a renewal, or an amendment will have their sex listed to match the one given at birth. Oregon lawmakers have largely been in support of the Biden-era policy that allowed passport holders to select a gender-neutral X rather than a male or female designation. Stenvik adds the Oregon Department of Justice, as well as Attorney General Dan Layfield, have been at the forefront of challenging policies that have had negative impacts on trans people. Though this is a challenging time, Stenvik encourages trans Oregonians to take heart.
Depending on who is in office in the next presidential administration, it could change again. But you're much more than whatever the letter on your passport, ID, or birth certificate says.
Stenvik adds state-issued IDs in Oregon, like driver's licenses, can still be amended to match a person's gender. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Immigrations and custom enforcement arrests in Oregon skyrocketed in November, according to data collected by the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition. By their count, arrests are up 550% compared to previous months. 329 people were arrested in Oregon last month, likely an undercount. The Deportation Data Project estimates that's nearly 100 more than the number of arrests for the first 6 months of the year. Over four Pacific Northwestern states, including Oregon. ICE has ratcheted up the violence of their raids and the amount of people detained at each arrest. Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition board member Natalie Lerner told OPB, quote, "They're arresting whoever is in the car who cannot immediately prove they have status. It's detained first and ask questions later," end quote. The fear of arrest has many Oregonians staying home from work, school, doctor's appointments, and community gatherings. Over half of the arrests last month were in Washington County, leading the county commission to declare a state of emergency. Advocates are now calling on the Beaverton School Board to develop emergency plans to protect students, as other area school districts have. Schools have become a frequent place for ICE to look for parents dropping their kids off. In response, parents and community members in Portland have taken to standing watch around elementary schools at pickup and drop-off time, keeping a watch for ICE officers.
Some 700 unionized New Seasons workers across the Portland metro area could go on strike on December 17th. Union members voted to authorize a strike if they can't come to an agreement with management before December 4th. New Seasons Labor Union has been in negotiations with management on their first contract since January of 2023. Many articles in their first contract have already been tentatively agreed to by both sides. Still at issue, though, are the articles on wages, health insurance eligibility, and paid time off. Workers want a $20 an hour starting wage with cost of living adjustments and raises every 6 months. Management is pitching $18 an hour. Ella Malloy is a bargaining committee representative. Malloy told KGW, quote, "We sincerely hope to avoid a strike ahead of the holidays, but this vote provides a strong mandate for us to stop the company from cutting our members' health care and provide for a starting wage that allows for some dignity," end quote. The union is asking the public not to cross the picket line if they do go on strike. Starbucks workers at five unionized stores in the Portland area are also on strike. Their strike started last week in protest of the lack of progress in their negotiations with Starbucks management.
Workers in Washington state could gain more protections with a new bill that would completely prohibit the use of non-compete arguments. Currently, the use of these arguments is limited to residents who make more than about $120,000. Isabel Charlet has more.
New legislation would prohibit the use of non-compete agreements for all employers in Washington state. These type of contracts are used to prevent employees from taking another job with a competitor or starting a related business within a certain distance or amount of time. Hardeep Reki is an employment lawyer and the president of the Washington State Association for Justice. He says all employees should be able to shop their skills around to any employer they want, and that non-compete agreements put workers in an unfair position.
So what it does, it usually suppresses their wages. It makes it so they have fewer opportunities than already a difficult job market. And sometimes it forces them to move out of the area uproot kids, uproot family, because the employer just doesn't want them working.
The bill would be an expansion of a 2020 state law limiting the use of non-compete agreements to employees making above about $120,000 a year. Sponsored by Representative Liz Berry, a Seattle Democrat, the bill will get public hearings in January once the legislative session starts. Proponents of non-compete agreements argue they are necessary in some fields to protect sensitive information. Recky clarifies this legislation would not affect non-disclosure agreements or NDAs. He says employers would still be fully able to enforce agreements that prevent employees from revealing confidential product or service information.
They give this reason of disclosure of information, but really what I think that the employer is doing is trying to suppress wages. Because we know that if you have free markets, a person's going to get what they're worth in that free market.
Recky adds Washington has long been seen as a good state for workers, which benefits businesses. He says this change would make it better.
When you continue to create a good environment for employees, employers know that that's a good place to find employees and create home bases.
For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
Watchdogs worry about the national wave of redistricting, as some professors say they're getting a record number of requests for information about their potential ideologies. And the U.S. continues to build up forces in the Caribbean. With those stories and more, it's Zimon Perez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Our goal is to ensure that when maps are drawn, we are instead centering the people, the constituents in those districts, and not politicians who want to maintain their own political power.
Joanne Antoine with Common Cause Maryland says Congress needs to act to make redistricting less partisan and to stop states from doing it except after a census. That state's Democratic governor is pressing for new congressional maps, the latest move in a national gerrymandering arms race ahead of the midterms. Texas, North Carolina, and Missouri have redrawn about 7 districts to lean more towards Republicans. California and Utah have redistricted 6 seats to be friendlier to Democrats, with Democrats in Virginia following suit. But Maryland's Democratic Senate president says new maps could make already blue districts more competitive. And some Republican lawmakers in Kansas and Indiana are making similar arguments there, in spite of pressure from President Donald Trump. North Carolina conservatives are using what look like partisan records requests to target public university faculty. UNC professor Michael Palm with the American Association of University Professors says many of the Freedom of Information Act requests target keywords like DEI, anti-racism, and LGBTQ+ in a way that encourages censorship.
They're using a series of key terms as evidenced in the FOIA request to try to find classes that right-wing ideologues find inviolable of what they deem to be acceptable material being taught in the classroom.
One of the two groups requesting records there is a former subsidiary of the Heritage Foundation, which helped draft Project 2025. It says it's auditing universities to stop tax-funded campuses from being, quote, ideological playgrounds, rather than institutions of higher learning. The Gerald Ford Aircraft Carrier Group arrived in the Caribbean yesterday, coinciding with another strike on a boat allegedly carrying narcotics. The government of Venezuela has announced a major military mobilization. Trump's Medicaid and Medicare administrator, Dr. Mehmet Oz, says the administration is considering extending ACA health insurance subsidies. The tax credits were the central sticking point in the government shutdown, with Democrats trying to get them extended to avoid letting premiums spike. I'm Zimon Perez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth look at the case for and against automatic vehicle plate recognition software at the Oregon Senate Judiciary Committee. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be mostly clear with an overnight low of 40 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a daytime high of 50 degrees. Today in history, in 1869, the Suez Canal in Egypt is inaugurated. It links the Mediterranean Sea with the Red Sea. The 120-mile-long canal is a key trade route between Europe and Asia. The quote of the day is from American drag queen and TV personality RuPaul, born today in 1960. He said, quote, "We're all born naked and the rest is drag."
A Native woman was released from ICE custody in Iowa after a clerical error. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Native American woman and her family are thankful that she's not detained and potentially deported by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Brian Bull of Buffalo's Fire has the story.
On Veterans Day, 24-year-old Letitia Jacobo completed a short sentence at the Polk County Jail in Des Moines, Iowa, for a traffic infraction. She was supposed to have been released at midnight, but things took an odd turn.
I don't know how to explain. I don't know how to put it in words. It was shocking. I was like, how do I have a ICE hold and I'm Native American? It was just weird. It was just crazy.
Jacobo's mom, Erica Burns, learned that her daughter was placed under an ICE detainer and was worried. Both women are members of the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community and therefore legal U.S. citizens. Jacobo's aunt, Maria Nunez, said her sister sprung into action.
Being the holiday that day, we couldn't do much. And here on her reservation side of the family was jumped on the media and reached out to everyone and whoever we could, because we didn't want her removed and sent to we don't know where.
Nunez says the tribal police chief called into corrections officials to vouch for Jacobo's citizenship. And an investigator learned that another inmate at the jail had the same last name as Jacobo. A spokesman for the Polk County Sheriff's Office said it was all a clerical mix-up, and staff have been talked to about preventing repeat errors. Again, Letitia Jacobo.
I'm very thankful for having family members and people out here, because if I didn't, who knows what it would have happened. I would have just unknowingly went to ICE custody. So it would have been a scary moment.
Many Native people and supporters are calling this a case of racial profiling, and Jacobo is weighing a lawsuit. For now, though, she plans to celebrate the holiday season with her family. Maria Nunez says she's happy that her niece is safe.
I'm just so proud to be Native American and have all the love and support in knowing that we're all ready to fight and protect what's ours.
Since the Trump administration ramped up its immigration crackdown, tribes have complained of ICE confronting their enrolled citizens. Many have issued guidance on their rights and what documentation to present if detained. Neither the Des Moines ICE office nor the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community returned requests for comment. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
The Colorado River has long been considered a lifeline for the Southwest. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, one Arizona tribe is now acknowledging the waterway as having the same rights and legal protections as tribal members.
The Colorado River Indian Tribes, or CRIT, would not say whether it was unanimous, but the 9 council members still voted to recognize personhood for the namesake river under tribal law. It comes at a pivotal time when sustained drought threatens this natural resource CRIT considers a living entity, running parallel to the tribe's nearly 300,000-acre reservation along the California border. This measure also tasks tribal councils to take the Colorado River's needs under consideration amid an uncertain future on two fronts, climate change and ongoing water negotiations. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
Tribal leaders from across the country are gathered in Seattle for the National Congress of American Indians annual convention and marketplace. Leaders are tackling top issues facing their communities, from economic development, education, climate, to language and culture. Additionally, a youth convention is taking place. Both gatherings continue through Friday. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Book censorship has grown rampant, with more than 2,400 book challenges reported at public libraries nationwide last year. A coalition of faith leaders say book bans threaten religious freedom and is joining with library workers to defend the right to read. Catherine Carley reports.
A coalition of faith leaders says the growing number of book bans nationwide is a threat to religious freedom. More than 2,400 books were challenged at public libraries nationwide last year, with the most frequently challenged titles dealing with gender, race, sexuality, and religion. Reverend Paul Brandeis Rauschenberg with the nonprofit Interfaith Alliance says libraries and religions are both keepers of stories that deserve protection.
This is a religious duty and a responsibility of faith communities to show up for our broader community and show up for everybody in the community.
He says librarians work to ensure people of all backgrounds and faith traditions can access the books that are important to them, yet they're being harassed both in public and online. A new campaign encourages houses of worship to send supportive postcards to their local librarians and for people of faith to take a pledge to defend the right to read. According to the American Library Association, more than 70% of demands to censor books in schools and public libraries come from pressure groups and government entities. A growing Christian nationalist movement has also seized upon book bans as a way to censor minority faiths and ethnicities. Brandeis Rauschenberg says libraries are like secular cathedrals in which people can learn from one another's stories and the books most sacred to them.
It's so important to keep spaces where people can meet, people can come together for fellowship. Libraries offer that. Religious communities offer that.
He says too often libraries are deemed to be at odds with people of faith, while extremists claim their religion as a justification for censorship. But he notes that people of all faiths have always been at the forefront of organizing efforts for justice and equality, while librarians have championed the freedom to read as vital to our democracy. For Maine News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
We are currently celebrating American Education Week, and Wednesday is Educational Support Professionals Day, which honors staff like bus drivers, lunch servers, yard workers, and more. Suzanne Potter tells us about this in California.
Many of us have fond memories of our school days with favorite teachers, but also people like bus drivers, lunch servers, and yard workers who made a real difference. This Wednesday is Educational Support Professionals Day, part of American Education Week, which celebrates non-teaching staff in schools. California schools depend on hundreds of thousands of so-called ESPs, from janitors to school secretaries. David Goldberg is president of the California Teachers Association.
They are a vital part of serving students in our communities. They're on the front lines in all of our efforts. They're really the eyes and ears of the community. It's something that districts really rely on.
California has created career pathways for ESPs through its Paraprofessional Teacher Preparation Program, along with professional learning initiatives through the California Department of Education. Many districts have formal recognition programs for non-teaching staff as well. There's new focus on ESPs because it's been a chaotic year for K-12 schools. For example, President Trump has threatened to withhold funding from schools that have diversity initiatives. Becky Pringle, president of the National Education Association, laments the Trump administration's decision to gut the Department of Education and encourages people to support leaders who value public schools.
During American Education Week, we celebrate wonderful, inspiring things that happen, but we also need to be reminded that we have the power to demand what our students need and what our educators deserve.
Last summer, the Department of Education significantly delayed almost $7 billion in grants that fund professional development for teachers, after-school programs, summer learning, English language classes, support for migrant students, school-based mental health programs, and adult education. At the time, an official from the Office of Management and Budget said, quote, "Initial findings have shown that many of these grant programs have been grossly misused to subsidize a radical left-wing agenda." For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Researchers in Puerto Rico are building a forecasting system to warn people exactly which streets will flood in a severe weather situation. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When a storm approaches, weather forecasters can tell people how much rain to expect and warn them if there's a risk of floods. But knowing where flooding is most likely to happen could help people better prepare, especially as climate change brings more extreme weather. So one researcher is creating a more advanced flood forecasting system for the coastal city of San Juan, Puerto Rico.
They will tell you, well, since you're going to have 3 to 5 inches falling in this place, more than likely this street that you tend to pass by is going to be flooded from this time to this time.
To build this system, Felix Santiago Collazo of the University of Georgia and his colleagues are gathering information about historic flood patterns from San Juan residents.
That local knowledge component is crucial for this type of hyperlocal flood modeling. So having their input and telling us when it tends to flood, how bad, where the water goes.
And they're deploying an array of inexpensive solar-powered flood sensors on stop signs, electricity poles, and other locations across the city to track which areas are flooded during storms. By better understanding how high water affects different parts of the city, the researchers aim to provide more detailed forecasts of future floods. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, November 17th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our producer for tonight's newscast is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Suzanne Potter, Antonia Gonzalez, Zamon Perez, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Terrence Burns. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Multiple cities in Oregon have suspended the use of automatic license plates.